obviously sitting on the talent side now, seeing kind of what clicks with the athlete, what resonates with the brand, what they're interested in, what they're passionate about off the court, and then just always looking for synergy to see if I can kind of connect the dots and make sure to add value for all parties.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. I am actually doing this with a different co-host today because my usual partner, Joe Favorito, was at World Congress of Sports out in LA, and he's on his way back. I think he's on a plane as we record this podcast. So I'm doing it with our seemingly longtime producer, Mike. I don't know how long it's been. Mike Schroeder, a name some of you know, and a voice some of you know if you've listened to some of the pods that he's done, not only as an independent podcaster on sports, but also some of the stuff he's done with the students and with Joe. So, Mike, it's our first time together. We got a high bar. You ready?
Yeah, I'm definitely ready to go. It's always a pleasure being able to co-host these episodes, more just because of the stories I get to hear as a student. So that's obviously a great opportunity to obviously speak with you, and I'm really excited to speak with our guest today. So thanks for the opportunity.
Good. And our guest isn't any stranger to me and Mike, and certainly not to many of those familiar with the Columbia program. Let's get right into it. We've got a great guy with us today. Again, well-known to the Columbia community and some of you now in the world of sports agencies, particularly related to basketball. Layden Williams, who's at the Lyft agency now. Layden, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it, and looking forward to our conversation today.
Great. So let's just add a little bit more context. In addition to being involved with Columbia as an alumnus, he is also the course associate for the class that I teach, digital media, and the one that Mike happens to be taking right now. So this is a cozy little group we have here for today's conversation. Sure. Layden, let's do a quick recap for those who don't know you or not familiar with your background. Just give us a minute on the essentials and leading up to your career now with Lyft.
For sure. I'm sure Bess will appreciate this. I'll give you my elevator pitch.
So nice. Okay, good.
Layden Williams, originally from a small town, Roanoke, Virginia. Went to undergrad at Catawba College, where I played basketball for 4 years and started as a team captain for about 3 years. Majored in accounting. Directly after undergrad, I went to Radford University to get my MBA. So for the first 7 years of my professional career, I actually worked in financial services across risk management, internal audit, 3 years at MetLife, and then 3.5 years at Wells Fargo down in Charlotte. In 2018, I was honestly just kind of frustrated with my position in financial services and wanted to pivot to a space that I was super passionate about. So I decided to kind of flex my creative muscle. I started a podcast, I wrote a book, and was also hosting events that were geared towards kind of bringing people together in the sports, entertainment, and lifestyle culture space. And ultimately decided to kind of rip the Band-Aid off, leave my job, and apply for the Columbia program. So at the end of 2019, I moved to New York to pursue my master's in sports management from Columbia. Along the way, I was able to kind of co-found the BSMU, which is the Black Sports Management Union, geared towards advancing Black and Brown pathways within the industry, which led to my first internship with Excel Sports, working on their brand marketing team. Directly after that role, I was able to join CSM, where I was for about a year and a half, working on their media and entertainment team and helping them develop new business opportunities in terms of partnership opportunities for their media platforms, such as Hulu, HBO Max, and Netflix. After that opportunity, I was able to join Wasserman, where I was for about 9 months working across the NBA and AT&T partnership, helping with their tentpole activations. Working on that side really allowed me to kind of see what it's like to work on the brand side, but more importantly, work closely with talent. So after that, I was able to join Lyft, where I've been for about a year and a half now, helping our NBA, WNBA, and NCAA athletes build and amplify their brands on and off the court. Like I said, working closely with our team here and our growing roster. I've been here about a year and a half, but some exciting news coming in the next couple of weeks.
Wow. That talk about an intro. You got that down.
I've said it once or twice.
I love how you just kind of dropped in the middle of it that you wrote a book. So we got to rewind to that. Just remind us what that was.
Yeah, for sure. The book is actually called Beyond the Game. It talks about the transition from being a student athlete to finding your identity and purpose thereafter. As I mentioned, I played college basketball at Catawba, and for most of my life, coming from a big sports family, I was known as like the guy that plays basketball. So I kind of had like a little bit of an identity crisis when I was probably 22 to 23, when I was realizing what my next steps were, when I didn't want to go overseas and play basketball. So I had to kind of think about what I wanted to do from a career perspective. And at the time, it made sense to kind of dive into the financial space since my undergrad was in accounting and I just attained my MBA. But like I said, I served my time of 6 years and realized I wanted to kind of pivot to greener pastures.
But what was the impetus to actually do a book on that
Yeah,
subject? Because
so
that's not like a casual decision.
for sure. So I was actually journaling. I started back in 2014. I would spend probably 10 to 15 minutes, or what I would called the 8-line rule, just write 8 lines down. And at the time, I was like, all right, what am I actually doing with these notes? Am I just keeping them for internal memories? Am I looking back, or is this something that I'm gonna hold on to for the future? And I happened to attend just a random book signing in Charlotte, North Carolina, for this athlete at the time was writing a book on mental wellness. And I was like, all right, I have all these journal pages, maybe I can turn it into an actual book. So that process started in 2014, and like I said, the book was actually published in 2019. But long story short, it began with me journaling each and every day.
Wow. So are you using the journal app that Apple gave us on their iPhones last year?
Nah, I'm more of a audio notes type of guy, so I'll give myself
Okay.
a voice memo, and then I'll convert it to, text
Excuse me.
later.
Yeah. Mike, did you use the journal app? Like, who's using this journal app? Anybody?
All right.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm quite. I would say if I'm writing more stuff, it's more voice memos, I think, as Layden kind of talked about. But Layden, a question I have for you, which I think, this is an interesting topic, is you talked about just in that wonderful intro you put together, the idea of partnerships, brand marketing, but now you work at Athlete Marketing, right? Which seems like a huge transition, but I
For
feel
sure.
like there's definitely similarities. Can you talk about the transition going from when you started Excel, you were a brand marketing associate, to now you're the senior director of athlete marketing, which seems like a big difference, but just talk about how the similarities matched up.
Yeah, for sure. I think I've been able to kind of add at each stop, I've been able to add different things to my toolbox. So whether that's, like you said, sitting on the brand marketing side, or even kind of assisting with the overview of a partnership, just understanding kind of how brands think, how they go about kind of sourcing their talent. And then obviously sitting on the talent side now, seeing kind of what clicks with the athlete, what resonates with the brand, what they're interested in, what they're passionate about off the court. And then just always looking for synergy to see if I can kind of connect the dots and make sure to add value for all parties involved.
Hey, Layden, just let's go back a second on the founding of Lyft, because I don't think you mentioned that the founder is Mike Miller, well-known NBA veteran or alumnus, really amazing player during his long career in the NBA. But can you just tell that story quickly?
Yes, for sure. So our agency was founded by NBA legend Mike Miller. To your point, he's a two-time NBA champion, down in Miami Heat, played alongside with LeBron James, had a very illustrious career, was Rookie of the Year. He started the agency back in 2019, had a very big splash, was able to sign Paolo Banchero 2 years ago, who's now an NBA All-Star and Rookie of the Year. To that point, now we actually have 45 athletes across the NBA, WNBA, and NCAA. Most notably, as I mentioned, Paolo, but also his teammate Wendell Carter, Pat Beverley of the Bucks, Tyson, Trey Jones, Wendell Moore, Max Christie, Ty Washington. And then at the NCAA level, we have Boogie Ellis, Jeremiah Fears, and a handful of guys that are on our NIL roster from a high school perspective that are going to make major waves as they kind of step into the college and professional landscape of sports. But to your point, our agency was founded by Mike Miller 2 or 3 years ago, and we've really kind of hit the ground running ever since then.
Wow, that's a really an amazing amount of progress in a couple of short years to get to this point. You've got a lot going with mostly younger athletes, but with Pat Beverley in the mix as an example of a true veteran of the NBA. I don't know how long it's been for him, at least what, 10,
I want to
11
say
years?
I think it's it might be closer to 13, I believe. I'd have to
Yeah,
double check.
yeah, yeah. So let's talk about that for a second, because it feels like there's a generation now that has been raised differently, as we like to say in our class, the digital natives, grown up with kind of a different mentality about how to promote themselves publicly, about what interests and what passions they want to share publicly, et cetera. So just let's talk about that. Let's say a high potential 19-year-old right now coming into
Yeah.
the market, as opposed to a 34-year-old veteran who was not a digital native, who really a different generation.
Yeah.
Talk about the differences and what it's like now for the talent coming up.
Yeah, for sure. I would say for the talent coming up now, what you're really seeing is these guys are really thriving, and these young ladies, they're also really just thriving at content creation, and it's pretty authentic. So as young as 15 to 16 years old, you're seeing them with massive followings, whether that's 40 to 50 to even hundreds of thousands of people that are following them before they even play at the college level, let alone the professional level. So you're seeing more early opportunities, whether that's branded content, whether that's partnership opportunities, whether that's storytelling experiences, and just kind of allowing them to highlight their interests off the court. What you're seeing is a first peek, and you're really able to kind of follow the journey from that young age of 16 well into their college, into their professional career. You look at someone like a Pat Bev 15 years ago. I mean, obviously there was social media, but it wasn't like it is today. So you weren't really able to kind of see his day-to-day process of building a podcast, of really kind of leaning into his big personality off the court. But someone like that's a rising star, like one of our guys, like a Jaden Quaintance or a VJ Edgecombe or a Trey Johnson, you're getting to kind of see a firsthand look of what it looks like to be a McDonald's All-American, what it means to take your talents to the next level, and then hopefully be a potential lottery draft pick one day.
So they're all, it's an interesting question for me because not everybody wants to be a content creator or an
Yep,
influencer or a
for
mark
sure.
or a young marketer or promoter, but it almost feels like the high potential prospects kind of have to get into that world a little bit. Is that a fair statement?
That's a somewhat fair statement here. Lyft, one of our actual taglines is keep the main thing. And being a basketball-centric agency, we always want the athlete to kind of focus on what's obviously kind of giving them that notoriety and getting them that stardom, which is their craft on the court. So to your point, if they're comfortable kind of creating content and showcasing their personality, then we're all for it. But also if they're a little bit more selective in terms of kind of what they're sharing, what they're posting, and what they're creating, that's also an avenue that we fully lean into as well. It kind of depends on the athlete, but there are media platforms that kind of cover them from an annual perspective, whether that's with McDonald's All-American or the Jordan Jumpman Classic, that allows them to kind of grow their social audience. So yes, they might not be posting every day or every week, but there's platforms that are covering them that ultimately allows them to kind of grow their audience.
Yeah, I guess a follow-up to that is, we know with brands how generally agencies are looking at the values of these brands match up with the athletes themselves, right? But when looking at athletes, again, you're dealing with high school athletes to veterans, right? When you guys are looking at the marketability of them, what goes into, an athlete that you guys think is good at Lyft to be able to market and bring to the fold? Because I feel like that it's different across me what the values of the agency are. Can you speak a little bit to that when you're kind of
Yeah,
assessing
for
talent?
sure. Yeah, for sure. So when we're doing proactive outreach and trying to secure a partnership for our younger athletes, we're very strategic and intentional in kind of our approach. So we lean into kind of anything that's interested that's from a non-basketball perspective. So let's say that they're into anime, or let's say they played an instrument growing up, or they have some type of military connection. Really kind of leaning into those fun facts and those nuggets when we're having those conversations with brands and saying, hey, we realize that this is a young rising athlete, but it would be great to kind of build a foundation relationship here, whether that's through a storytelling opportunity, whether that's through seeded product, or whether that's through an actual paid partnership. Just being cr creative and again strategic in how we kind of broker those conversations.
Layden, on the subject of the different facets of the business that you mentioned, so NBA players, WNBA players, NIL, college players, NIL prospects, et cetera, has the incredible growth of women's basketball that we've witnessed these last few months influenced the way your agency is looking at the expansion of the business? In other words, trying to get more women in the mix as the brands seem to be more supportive now of women's basketball and women's sports in general. Like, in other words, a lot of good potential there. Not to say there's not great potential with the mainstream stuff you're doing, but the women's growth curve seems to be a little bit steeper right now.
Yeah, for sure. And what I will say, just from my experience and working with some of our clients, is that the women are really, really good at content creation. I'm not sure if that's because there's obviously a huge pay gap between the pro athletes on the NBA and the WNBA side, but they understand like, okay, I use this brand every day. I might put it on my TikTok, or I might put it on like my Instagram story, and that might lead to like a paid partnership opportunity. And they're just a little bit more authentic. Again, it's a case by case scenario, so I'm not speaking about the totality of male athletes, but in general, you'll notice that women athletes are more kind of willing to open up and share their kind of off the court interests and hobbies. And I really think that that leads to more conversations with brands that are kind of looking to kind of spin in the women's space and partner with WNBA athletes.
Something I wanted to also ask is, in an article that you wrote on LinkedIn back in 2020, when you're kind of looking for your job search, you talk about how you bring fruitful relationships to, the industry, right? Can you talk about now when you're in a position, right? As Tom mentioned, right, you're dealing with women's basketball players who are at a growing level, NIL, right? Talk about the relationship that you can build with basketball players because you were a basketball player at the collegiate level. How are you able to leverage that? Does that help you think, being able to relate to these athletes and be able to market them effectively?
You've done some research. A 2020 post. I might have to go on my LinkedIn and see what I actually
He
said.
can't even remember what he wrote at this point.
Exactly. But yeah, that's a great question. I think in terms of like being able to build, manage, and nurture relationships, that's actually something that I like to kind of say I thrive in. Just being able to ultimately find common ground with the athlete, whether that's saying I'm from Virginia and maybe they play Virginia Tech at some point, or finding out that like their favorite restaurant is Chipotle, and then like kind of sharing my order. At the end of the day, just being able to kind of find common ground and realize that they are human, and just have like a conversation is what allows you to gain their trust, and then ultimately get to kind of know who they are off the court, which again helps on like the marketing side when I'm having these conversations with different brands, different thought leaders, different decision makers that are looking to kind of partner with athletes. And then from just like the basketball perspective, I mean, like you said, I am a former student athlete, so I understand just like the nuances of on the court, the training, the workout, the regimen. So if the guy wants to talk basketball all day, I have no problem doing that. But if he wants to talk marketing all day, I can also do that. So being able to kind of translate and just kind of ultimately add value to the athletes and the clients we represent is ultimately what I'm here for.
Is there any issue with the strain and stress of all the marketing with these young hot prospects that is bad for mental health? I mean, there's been a lot written about this, and we've actually done some stuff on the podcast about this with some athletes, where you've got so much pressure already, pressure to perform in the sport you're playing, pressure ostensibly academically. Pressure sometimes financially now because there's opportunities to get money, to make money that there weren't before. How far is too far? And are you seeing this as an issue? Is the industry seeing this as an issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that again, kind of doubling back on my previous response of keeping the main thing, and it being a case by case scenario of athletes. If they want to really lean in on the marketing, they want to lean in on the content, we tell them, hey, go for it. But if you have a busy schedule, if you're traveling back to back weekends, if you have something going on with your family, you kind of want to take a time out and take a pause. We'll also kind of lean in on that and provide support to make sure that you can focus on everything that's going on in your life. But to your point, with these younger athletes, there's more opportunities, and with more opportunities, there comes at times, I guess, more stress and more heightened conversations around kind of making sure that they're in a good mental space. So we provide those services as well. But I will say that ultimately, allowing them to kind of focus on basketball separates that.
I think one thing I also wanted to ask is with that there's the idea that the media also, amps up a lot of these high level players. Like Paolo obviously is in the media scape a lot. So is Patrick Beverley, right? But all these high school guys coming up who are McDonald's All-Americans are going to be experiencing that when they get to college. Do you like what hand do you guys have, or maybe you personally, in making sure these athletes feel like they're prepared for the media that amplified measures that they're going to be experiencing, and just like the scrutinization maybe, or just like the pressure they're going to face from just being on TV all the time. I know they've gone overtime and all these different things, but can you talk a little bit about how you guys help prepare them for what they're going to experience going forward?
Yeah, for sure. So we actually have a full PR and comms team and communications team here that actually preps them with media lessons and sits them down and have one-on-one conversations. Actually, with NBA draft right around the corner, we have some guys that are in New York for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And a part of their off-court training is actually going through these mock draft questions. So at Lyft, we actually have a legal counsel who was the former GM at the Minnesota Timberwolves by the name of Noah Kroom. So he actually sits with our clients and he actually runs them through kind of questions that they can expect to hear when they're getting prepared for the NBA draft, when they're having post-game interviews or any type of conversations that will be public facing. We run that by our PR and communications team. And that starts at the high school level, well into the college, and obviously the professional level as well.
Did you guys watch the WNBA draft?
Yeah, I watched it.
I was really struck by just the raw emotion that came through. That at least, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't see as much of that raw emotion in the NBA draft with the men. Occasionally you get someone who gets emotional with the family or whatever standing next to them. But it was kind of like every one of those, or not everyone, most of the women that got up on stage and got interviewed, it was like very real and raw. I thought
For
it
sure.
what and it's probably not a coincidence the rating was broke a record by a wide margin. But I think part of it was that it's really good interviewing by I forget her last name. Is it Holly from
Holly
ESPN?
Rowe.
Yeah, she like even my wife knows, commented, we had it on, and she wasn't really paying attention. So she said, that woman's a really good interviewer. And I said, she is. And she got, so anyway, talk about that. Am I the only one to notice that, or did you guys get that sense too?
No, I definitely think that there was obviously more hype around this year's WNBA draft, given the stars that came out this year. But I definitely noticed that there was a lot of excitement, a lot of emotions that were kind of shared across that stage a few nights ago. And I think that that's something that we'll see as these rising stars continue to kind of pave the way for women's sports.
Mike, what was your take on that?
I think the thing that struck me the most was I mean, I gotta give Aaliyah Funchal a lot of credit because we went to the event and did a great job kind of building this through a social lens. But Kate Martin getting drafted when no one thought she was going to get drafted, right? That you can just see the emotion of that. And even Caitlin Clark was trying not to like show a lot of like show emotion, but you could tell like how happy she was. And I think that honestly, that's a big reason why you see women's sports doing so well is just like the raw emotion, like you see like the connectivity between the players. That's just been a big thing
Yeah,
that I
almost like
noticed.
it's almost like they appreciate it more or something like that. I know that's probably not true, but it's great for media content. That's what I was thinking. Like, this is good stuff. This is working.
For
So it's going
sure.
to be really fun to see how this translates to viewership and attendance as the season begins next month. Go ahead, Mike.
So
Agreed.
shifting over to media a little bit, you guys obviously deal with athletes who have their own podcast, right? And obviously the point, obviously, as you've talked about, is like these athletes trying to build their own brand through media. Can you talk a little bit about just again the properties that Lyft Media deals with, and maybe also, how do you think these athletes can continue to use media to build their brand because of just the use of social and how digital has just increased at a high level?
Yeah, for sure. So some of the properties that we represent are the Pat Beverly show, obviously with Pat and Roan. Gil's Arena, which is Gilbert Arenas and Josiah Johnson, who's the king of Twitter or king of X, whatever they're calling days. The Sid and TP show with Sydney Colson and Teresa Poussance, and then also the OGs with our CEO and super agent Mike Miller, which is co-hosted by Udonis Haslem. And I think the current theme here is just ultimately allowing athletes to control their own narrative, whether that's with content and sitting down with current or former athletes or celebrities or influencers or different tastemakers and kind of giving their take on what's the hot topic of the week or of the day, or even just kind of going back and forth and talking about their glory days as athletes. But again, I think that the theme there is just really allowing them to kind of tell their story and from their perspective, which is typically very authentic. You get someone like Pat Bev, who's a little bit unfiltered, but he definitely has like a cult-like following. People are hanging on every words he says and looking forward to his next kind of podcast. If he has a good game, if he has a bad game, people are still going to listen to the show. So I think that in terms of the future in media, you'll see more of these kind of opportunities for current and former athletes to really step up to the plate.
Let's talk about your job, actual job, for a few minutes. How do your prospecting and your outreach?
Yes. So in terms of outreach, so we actually have a targeted approach where we're basically looking for local, regional, and even national kind of opportunities for our athletes and for our clients. So in terms of prospecting, like I said, the first step when we actually sign an athlete, we have a marketing questionnaire, which is typically about 35 to 40 questions. We're asking them everything under the sun, from what's their favorite movie to what's their what type of deodorant do they use, what's their favorite snack, what's their favorite kind of pastime hobby, and then again, just really kind of drawing in on those nuggets when we're reaching out to different brands on different relationships we have across the industry to kind of see what makes sense from a partnership perspective.
Can you give any examples, specific examples from your experience so far?
Let me see, what example would I want to Yeah, so we actually I did this actually came from Twitter about a year ago. I was literally just scrolling my timeline, not on there as much as I am any day these days, but I came across this Minnesota head basketball coach. It was a high school coach that was talking about this upcoming beverage brand that he was doing consulting work for, and I realized that we had some clients that play for the Timberwolves, and we also had a guy that plays for the University of Minnesota. So I literally shot him a DM. I said, "Hey, I'm Layden. I work on the marketing team at Lyft. Co-founded by Mike Miller. We represent guys that play on the Timberwolves. Would love to just hop on a call, take 15 minutes to share more about our roster." We hopped on a call. They hadn't launched the product yet. They still haven't launched the product, but they were interested in kind of partnering with a Minnesota athlete. So fast forward to 10 months later, and earlier this week, we actually shot a commercial with the brand, and we're actually coming out with that partnership. I think later this month is with Wendell Moore, who plays for the Timberwolves, and the brand's called X Hydration. And I realized that he wanted a beverage deal, but also they wanted a Minnesota professional athlete. So again, kind of finding that synergy and then keeping that conversation and that relationship warm for about 10 months is just one example.
Good for you. That's really smart. Mike, just a quick follow-up for Layden. When you actually let's take the example of Paolo, because obviously he was going to be extremely high potential for himself and anybody working with him. So the example there would be you knew he was going to go to Orlando, or once you knew he was going to go to Orlando, you're looking at Orlando, you're looking at Florida, and you're looking at national. You're syncing that up with his likes and dislikes per the questionnaire. Are you keeping him apprised along the way? Like, in other words, do you kind of do all that work and then just lay it all on him when you're ready to go for something? Or are you actually including him as part of the sales process? I've always wondered that about athletes and these deals.
For sure. That's a good question. And just to kind of be, I guess, a little bit to provide some context. So typically it's a case-by-case scenario, but for like someone that's an all-star like Apollo, or someone that's high level like a PJ Washington or a Pat Bev, what we do is we perform the outreach, and then when we have something that's kind of fully baked, we would take that to them, or we would actually take it to their client service lead, and then we would let them ultimately decide if it's like a pass or if they want to move forward with the opportunity. But we again just want them to focus on keeping basketball the main thing, so we don't keep them in the weeds, so to speak, of, hey, we're talking to this brand, there might be an opportunity here, there
Yeah,
might
you're
be
not
this.
doing like a weekly status report to
Yeah,
say
no, it's almost like,
we've reached out to 50 companies. Here's our 90, 50, 10 prospecting list or whatever.
That conversation would be internal. Like I said, once we can have those fully baked opportunities, we would have like a bulleted list that says like, "Hey, this is the brand, this is the opportunity, this is the fee, this is kind of when we need to know yes or no by," and then we kind of circle back to the brand.
You doing more LinkedIn or email outreach when it's cold?
I do both. Obviously, I feel like tech. I feel like most deals are closed via text, but I'm not opposed to going through LinkedIn, but typically email. But like, is the best way to kind of ultimately get the phone number and then close that deal. So yeah.
And then, wait, did you tell me once that you're using Sponsor United or something like that?
Yeah, so we use a
Okay.
handful of different platforms in terms of finding contacts and finding information of who's ultimately those decision makers in different brands. I feel like just relationships throughout the industry are the best way to kind of navigate those conversations, whether that's attending different industry events or going through your book of contacts and so forth.
So talk a little bit about, again, you guys are growing and, trying to obviously become hopefully the premier basketball agency out there. Talk about the challenges though with trying to continue that rapid growth as you compete in like a big market like New York with other agencies and trying to keep you guys at the forefront of places athletes and basketball want to go.
Can you, I'm sorry, you kind of broke up. Can you re-ask that question?
Sure. So talk about the challenges of trying to continue the success that Lyft has already had and do that while you're competing in a big market like New York, where there's other obviously high level agencies and trying to make sure you guys are the ultimate destination for high leverage bas and high level basketball players.
Yeah, for sure. I think being kind of that smaller boutique agency, what really sets us apart is that hands-on approach and being able to directly connect with the athletes. I also think that having a super agent and a founder like Mike Miller, I mean, that's unparalleled. He still works without the guys. He provides custom workouts, so there's no better way to learn how to be a pro than from a pro. And I think that's one really big competitive advantage that we have. We have someone that's been Rookie of the Year, that's won two NBA championships, that's signed the first overall draft pick, who's now an all-star. So I think that just being able to kind of, again, walk the walk, but also talk the talk is what allows us to kind of set ourselves apart from some of the other agencies that you see out there. And on our marketing team and on our PR and on our communications team, we have rock stars from other that have been in the agency space for multiple decades, that have closed 8 and 9 figure deals along the way. So I think that just being able to kind of have that and add that to our repertoire has allowed us to really thrive in the agency space.
Are you guys fans of this transfer portal?
That's a great question. I think it, like with everything in life, I think it has its pros and cons. I think the pros are it allows students to, if they feel like they're not getting ample amount of playing time and they're not getting along with their team or their staff, or for whatever reason they see fit, the school's not their best option, they can kind of leave and transfer. But at the same token, being a little bit older, I'm used to kind of, hey, if you're going to this school, you're probably going to be here for 3 or 4 years. Even if like the coach leaves, maybe that might be your chance to kind of go somewhere else. But I think it's allowed college basketball to be a little bit more of an even playing field, because what you're seeing is these schools that are winning championships aren't necessarily the ones that are going to be the ones that are always getting the one and done guys. It's typically going to be those guys that have some one and done superstars, but also a mix of those 3 and 4 year veteran players that have that senior leadership.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a balance though of not going like to five schools in 5 years. But I do agree with Layden on the idea that if a situation calls for you to be at a different place because of your ability to make a bigger impact, there is a need for that. I think the big thing that this NIL has done is it's made college more attractive to be there for 3 or 4 years as opposed to the one and done. Evidenced by, Oakland, it seemed like Oakland beating Kentucky, you have people
True.
talking about as the one and done rule. Not going to work and, that kind of stuff. And so I think there's obviously there's balance that could be always put into these things, but I think
Of course.
ultimately 3 or 4 years now, it looks way more attractive when you're making NIL money and you can choose your own destiny as opposed to maybe 5 years ago.
Exactly.
I was just looking at the reading about the Bronny James story, which is happening as we speak. And I see he went into the transfer portal. But he also is thinking about the NBA draft, and I understand that he has until early July, excuse me, early June to make that decision. And it almost feels like, and I don't know more than what I've read, but it's kind of like just let's throw it all up there on the wall and see what we get. Like it's kind of a lack of commitment, because if you're his coach at USC, then I guess you're planning a future without him on the team. If you're, in this case, his father, like his famous father, is he kind of the puppet master saying, well, let's work our connections and we'll see if you'll get drafted in the league. And then I don't know, like it seems a little weird to me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. I think the media plays a big part because you're seeing these young men announce that they're entering the portal. You're seeing that they're announcing that they're testing the waters. You're seeing that they're announcing that they're getting these different NIL opportunities. So I think that media definitely plays a interesting role in terms of how the rollout for each prospective student athlete. And I think it's a case by case scenario. So you might see kids just jump into the portal and there's not a huge splash, or you might see someone that has the notoriety kind of have a full rollout that says, "Hey, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and I want you to kind of follow each step." I will just say that I'm glad I'm on the marketing side and not on the coaching side. For
Yeah, it does not seem like it's a fun scenario for coaches
sure.
to deal with. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, so one thing I wanted to ask is with NIL, right? You see sometimes the people who are really good content creators, but maybe aren't as good of athletes getting a lot of deals because their ability to go on social media and create content is like really attracted to brands. But I feel like would you just talk a little bit about when you are navigating the NIL space and looking at athletes, I'm assuming production goes a long way too. It's not going to be just if you create good content, but you're averaging 3 points a game, that's probably not attractive to an 18-year-old lift. But talk about kind of, evaluating NIL through that lens of
Yeah, I mean,
being productive in the court and also creating good content.
for sure, I think the best balance is obviously someone that's killing it on the court and also is comfortable creating content authentically. If you already have kind of a sizable following before you hit campus, the next thing you have to do is literally just get on the court and obviously just kind of do your thing and have some good minutes and have some good stats to kind of back up what you're doing across social media. Because it always helps with the conversations that we're having with brands. Let's say we have someone in March Madness and they're averaging 15 points per game and they have 100,000 followers. Of course, a brand's going to want to kind of partner with them. But if they're not really getting that kind of spotlight, but they're at a big time program, you'd be shocked to see that they're actually still probably going to get some type of NIL opportunities because brands want to be associated with that school, even if it's with a player that's not necessarily getting the most playing time.
You know, I'm thinking we never do this on the pod, but like, what the hell? Let's talk a little hoops just as fans for the last section, just to have some fun because we're on the verge of the NBA. Well, the NBA playoffs have technically started with the play-in
There we go.
tournament. Just turning out to be quite interesting. I just read that Jimmy Butler, we're recording this on Friday the 19th, and Butler is playing Chicago, or excuse me, Miami's playing Chicago tonight, but Butler's going to miss the game because of
Saw
this
that.
injury.
That's neat.
Yeah, which
Yeah.
is a big deal, obviously.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about what's happening right now? It's pretty in shaping up to be a really interesting postseason. Any thoughts? Any predictions?
Well, I'm going to be a little biased here because I have some clients that are in the mix.
Right.
I'm predicting that Orlando is going to beat Cleveland 4-3. Obviously, we all live in New York, so I think that the buzz that's going around the city with the Knicks is going to be kind of interesting to see how they shake things out as a 2 seed. And then just the
Playing
storyline.
Philly's confirmed. Actually, they play
Exactly.
tomorrow, I believe. Yeah.
Of course. And then just the storylines of guys like LeBron being in the league for 20 plus years and then kind of seeing what these contending teams will do. So I think that the next 40 nights will have some good basketball for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Just I think the storylines of, also the Lakers haven't beaten the Denver Nuggets in 9 straight matches. So seeing if they can actually get by them after getting swept last year or the Clippers and Mavs obviously having that epic couple series they had from a couple years ago and then doing it again. But also like the younger teams that are now like Minnesota, OKC, who have performed at a really high level, like can they actually make a run? Because the Western Conference is really deep and so is the Eastern Conference, and at least in the top seven, very anyone could be anyone in that. So it should be really exciting. I mean, at least as a guy who loves basketball and lives, breathes it, it's gonna be interesting. But we'll see how it goes. I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm really hoping we beat Philly.
I like how both of you guys skillfully avoided making any predictions. So I'm going to press you
Of
on that. Let's talk about
course.
Philly, New York, because that's what everybody I know is talking about right now. Because it feels like this year the Knicks actually have a shot. Because while the other teams in the East are very good, particularly Boston, like they're not unbeatable in the eyes of many. So what do you think? Can number one, can we get through Philly? And if so, how far could they go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
And
know. I
Layden,
think
take off your lift sports management hat for a minute to
Yeah,
answer this question.
for sure. I think that without Julius Randle, who's one of their stars, I think it might be tough to kind of make up for what he provides. I mean, Brunson's having a great year, but if you lock down Brunson, you're relying on some of those other guys. So stopping Embiid and stopping Maxey, I think that might be a little difficult. So I think I'm going to go with Philly 4-2.
Okay. Hot take, Mike.
I don't like disagreeing with Layden much, but I'm gonna have to disagree with him on this one. It's biased too. I mean, I'm like the most diehard Knicks fan there is. So, I didn't think Philly looked good the other night against Miami. I don't think Embiid's 100%, and I think the Knicks have a bunch of bigs they can throw at him. So I think that's where I kind of go. And Embiid doesn't, while being incredible, like he's great. It just we're gonna you can if you throw a bunch of bodies at a guy who's coming off a major injury, right? Who doesn't have his win back? Like if this was Embiid MVP, different, much different story. But I have to see if he consistently can get you 35 every night, which I think he can do sometimes in the series. But we'll see. It's gonna be a
For
great
sure.
series, though. I'm excited. But I got the Knicks. I have to. I mean, and that would be disloyal to my fan base.
I'll add one more angle to this that I've been talking about with my friends who are big Knicks fans. And I've been saying this now for the last couple of months. I think the Knicks are a better team without Julius Randle on the court. They play better team basketball. And I know I'm not the only one to say this. So I actually think their odds are better with this lineup they've got going right now. My prediction is that that Jalen Brunson, who has more tenacity and grit than anyone in recent memory as a player, I think he's going to will them to victory.
Sure.
When I say victory, let's start with Philadelphia, and then we'll worry
Yeah.
about round two after that. But I wouldn't be surprised if I don't know how the seedings would work. Did they get reseeded after this first round? I can't remember.
No,
No,
they
you can see they just play the winner plays the winner of the other bracket, so
All
like
right,
a
so
one.
Boston wins their series, the Knicks win their series, they will eventually meet in the Eastern Finals. Yeah,
Correct.
okay. Yeah, I would go so far as to predict the Knicks would make it to the Eastern Finals. And why don't I just say it? Upset. Knicks go to the finals, New York goes insane. Knicks win the championship.
All right.
First
That'd be
glory we've
the
had in
greatest day in Knicks history.
51 years, right?
Exactly.
The last part was a little fanciful, I
All
grant, but
right.
anyway, it's fun to think about. Look, it's good to have some buzz in a great basketball town like New York. Great for the media business. And if you work for the NBA guys, you're really happy that these big markets like New York, LA, et cetera, are in the mix. And I guess tonight's interesting, Chicago versus Miami, because Chicago's a great market, but Miami's also a good market, so I'm not sure what they're thinking. And then on the western side of the ledger, it just feels like the Nuggets have some like a special chemistry
For
that
sure.
is really unusual, and it feels like they still have it. So who do you like in the West
I think
for
I'm gonna
the
go with the Nuggets again. We'll see. I
yeah.
think the Nuggets. So.
Nuggets are my championship pick. So I was, I've
Sure.
been talking to a lot of friends about it. They're just a well-oiled machine. And Jokic is
Yeah.
just, for a guy who, is probably slower than all three of us, he's unbelievable at basketball. So,
Yeah.
he figures it out and he's, so smart and so
For
gifted
sure.
as a player. He's a
Layden,
good.
you remember Taylor, one of the students in our program, Taylor DiBernardo?
They work for the Nuggets,
He
right?
does. He works for Cranky Sports, and
I was gonna say,
I'm
that's
sitting
cool.
there as you guys are talking about the Nuggets. I'm thinking, who do we know at the Nuggets? Taylor.
Right,
Okay. It's been a
exactly.
while, but he's a good guy. Former
Nice, nice.
podcast producer, Mike, by the way.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So, last hoops question. Who's going to be
Okay.
the MVP? Some people think it should be Brunson.
There's a guy down in Orlando by the name of Paolo Banchero. He's sitting behind me.
He
I
put,
think that's who
for
he
those of you who can't see,
is.
Layden put his left hat back on for that answer.
Oh yes. MVP this year. I think the guy in Oklahoma, the guard,
Shai
Gilchrist
Gilgeous,
Alexander. Yeah, I think he might be a dark horse to win MVP. They're having a really good year, or it could be Joker again, but we'll see.
I think I think it's between Jokic, Luka, and Shai. But I think it's going to go to Jokic just because the seeding and his stats. I mean, it's gonna be. I mean, Shea has a great case as well. But I think the narrative is like Jokic is gonna win his what is it, third MVP. And so it's
For
having a
sure.
guy win three MVPs and be probably the most frustrating guy to guard in the NBA. It's just it just shows you again. But it's crazy to see how all three of the guys are from the West too, which just shows you the level of the NBA. But Paul will get there.
Exactly. Well, this is fun,
All
guys.
right,
I'm
one last prediction on the business side of the NBA.
Okay.
You guys might have seen this week that the league is coming out of their exclusive negotiating period with Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery, meaning game on with the conversations with everybody. Doesn't mean that, by the way, that ESPN or Disney and Warner will not be in the mix when all's said and done, but this means they are going into the market to talk to conceivably the NBC Universal Comcast, the Amazons, the Apples, Googles, etc. So when this announcement comes out later in the year, who's going to be the next in the mix among the media partners to the NBA? Laden?
That
I
is
need
a trick.
specific names, the exact ones, and then I'm going to write these down. I'm going to take out the journal app on my iPhone and write this down when you're done.
What am I giving you? I'm giving you the names of media
Who will be the
properties.
media? But right now, everybody knows the media partners, the NBA national media partners are Disney, ESPN, and Warner Brothers Discovery as represented through Turner Sports.
I'm gonna make a bold choice. I'm gonna say I don't know. I'm just gonna throw some. I'm gonna say Netflix gets in the mix somehow.
Okay. But no, I said who will be the total, all the part, name the part, all the partners. Will Disney come back? Will Warner come back? Will Amazon get a game? Like, et cetera.
I think I'm gonna go with Disney. I don't think Amazon. I think Amazon's really leaning into that Thursday night football. So I think I'm just gonna go with Disney. What was the other options you gave? Disney.
Well, all the ones we talk about all the time in the class, could be one of the big tech companies. It could be one of the media. It could be an NBC. It could be Paramount, for all we know.
Okay,
CBS. Yeah.
I'll go with Disney and I'll go with Paramount because I think Paramount's been kind of experimenting with the whole March Madness, and I think that
Yeah.
they're
Okay.
seeing a lot of uptick in their viewership there. So I'm gonna go with Disney and Paramount, and also I'm gonna throw
Wow.
Netflix. Yeah.
And Netflix. That's a pretty radical. Well, not completely radical. I think two-thirds is a radical idea, but one-third is pretty safe. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah. So I think Disney and Warner Bros. Discovery are gonna renew. Just because obviously I think the NBA needs NBA on TNT and ESPN and ABC is obviously gonna always be involved. But in streaming, I actually think Paramount's a good choice. I think Peacock's gonna get a big wave in it because I know NBC like had and Peacock do a great job with football, but and obviously golf and you can go on the list. But I think if they can get basketball, that'd be huge for them. Really allow them to. So I think those are the big ones. And then lastly, I think Apple, just with how much they're starting to grow, if they can get like something like the NBA and then with their success with the MLS right now, I mean, think about that. So I think those are kind of the big ones. So Disney and Warner Bros. Discovery, Peacock, Paramount, and then I think Apple is the.
Wow, you're going with the broad distribution strategy.
There we go.
Right, you want mine?
Yeah, of course.
I agree with Mike. I think Disney has to have this property. Partly when you think about this, and this is something we talk about in the class, as you guys know, you think about what it represents in terms of inventory and how you have to program a network. There's a lot of NBA inventory from October until June. To give that up would be a huge hole in the ESPN programming calendar. So there's that reality. Secondly, I believe for its survival and possible future in a merged in a merged situ merger situation, which many are predicting for Warner Brothers Discovery, I think Turner Sports has to have the NBA back. So I agree with Mike that they will renew, albeit at much higher levels. The big question in the industry, as you guys know, is it going to be 2x, 2.5x, 3x? I'm going to go with 2.5x. I believe the value of the league is as high as it's ever been, and that's not just based on television ratings, because those are fairly modest relative to the NFL. But you guys know the cultural impact, the importance of the players of this league in our country and the world is enormous, and there's value in that. So those are the two, let's call them trad companies coming back, the incumbents. And then I'm going to go with Apple and Amazon splitting the streaming. I still think, you guys have heard me rant about this. Others, anybody who's talked to me in the last couple of years, know I'm kind of obsessed with this idea of Apple and NBA being in a partnership. It feels like Apple needs a partner for their spatial computing agenda. They need a major sports partner. And the only major one that I can see that would make sense, when I'd say main, meaning truly broad in terms of its reach and appeal, I believe is the NBA. I don't think the NFL would do something like this. Part of that could be a limited subset of games, some sort of package, as they say, for Apple TV. So it could be a combined like sponsorship media deal, that where Apple could be working very closely with the NBA on the new technologies, as well as getting deeper into some distribution for television. And then Amazon, I think, will pick off certain events, perhaps the in-season tournament, which has been rumored to be getting sold separately. It could be something as simple as the play-in tournament, like we've had these last couple of days. I think breaking these things up in pieces on the streaming side probably is the way it's going to. It's not going to be like an MLS Apple deal. Anyway, so I'm going to add all that to my journaling app, guys, and
All right.
we'll revisit it when the announcement breaks. Is hopefully Layden, it'll be when we start the fall semester together in
Of
September.
course.
Maybe that'll be one of our first conversations in the class.
Of course.
Anyway, Layden's got to go. Thank you for spending time with
Thank
us.
you
It's
guys.
really
Thank you
good
guys for
to
having me.
hear about what you're doing at Lyft. Really exciting times, really great
Of
career
course.
situation for you. So good luck with it. Continued success for the agency.
All right, thank you. I really
Mike,
appreciate that.
I think that went well. I enjoyed
Yeah,
co-hosting with you.
that was a lot of fun. And Layden, always a good time to talk to you. And
Of
enjoy the
course.
Jordan brand. All right, have a good
All
weekend.
right. See everybody in the
You bet.
next episode. Take care.